Hello and welcome to today's show entitled All About the Brahma Kumaris. My name is Magla Pillay. I'm a judicial officer in Africa and we're here today with Sister Denise, who's been practicing Raja Yoga meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years, and she's been the first person from the West to do so. The Brahma Kumaris was established in India about 77 years ago, and they're currently in over 120 countries across the globe, people who are engaged in Raja Yoga meditation as taught by the Brahma Kumaris. Currently, the Brahma Kumari population, Brahma Kumari and Kumar population, stands at around 1 million globally, with the vast majority being here in India. And the subject that we wish to take up today is that of God. What is interesting about God is that he or she is the single most famous personality of all time, and yet so little is known about him, and so much negativity is done in his or her name across the globe. And so we've invited Sister Denise to today's show to ask her what her understanding is of God. What is his name? What does he do? Where does he live? What does he look like? And what is his role in humanity at this time? So if these questions are of interest to you, I'd ask you to put aside whatever it is that you're doing and sit with us for the next half hour so that we can gain some clarity on this issue from somebody who is an experienced yogi. Thank you, Sister Denise, and a very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
Okay. You have been meditating for over 40 years. That implies by definition that you have a solid relationship with God, does it not?
It's very interesting. A relationship with God lasts longer than your life. So your relationship with God is there when you come in. It's there through your life. On some level, you may not know God, you may be looking for God or whatever, but I think that, at least for me, it's a discovery that it has always been there, but that when you're in body consciousness, you're cut off from it. But once you become soul conscious, then all of it is right there. So that's a very solid thing, that once you can experience it, once you can make it a very tangible part of your life, then that makes everything very different.
I see. Who is God?
Who is God? Big question. Mm-hmm. God is, first of all, non-human. We are human. God is the supreme among all souls. We are human souls. But God is not a human soul. So we have to think about that, that there is a relationship between the supreme soul and human souls. I'm a human soul. So I have to sort of become independent of the physical human part and focus on myself as a soul in order to be on the same dimension as God, the Supreme Soul. So then I can start to experience the presence of God, the reality of God, and what happens in the confluence age is that that non-human incorporeal supreme being actually comes and uses a human medium to communicate with us on a human level. So that's an extraordinary phenomenon, which also makes everything very tangible, because we human beings are used to the material world. And so when God wants to communicate with human beings, he has to do it through the medium of matter. And it is actually mentioned in the Gita, which is the scripture that we make reference to very often, is that God says, I take the support of matter. And so the founder of the Brahma Kumaris, Prajapita Brahma, formerly known as Dada Lekraj, was selected by the Supreme Soul as his medium. And it is through the medium of Brahma Baba that God talks to us and interacts with us. And that is an extraordinary phenomenon. So God lives, you asked, where does God live? God lives in the incorporeal world, or the world of souls, which is also called Nirvana, which is a location where it's like a bank of souls. So all the souls who have not yet incarnated on the earth, they live there. And then when it's their time to come here, they come here. And we all play our roles in this world. And then when our part is finished, then we return back to our home and we return back to God.
Does he or she have a gender? Does God have a name?
Not a gender. Definitely a name. The name of God is Shiv. Shiv is called an attributive name because of what it means. That's the name.
And what does it mean?
Three principal meanings. Shiva means the benefactor. So that means everything there is in the relationship of God and humanity is for the benefit of humanity. Shiva also means the seed. And so Shiva is called the seed of the tree of humanity. So the seed knows everything about the tree. So God is the creator, who knows the creation, who loves the creation, so the seed. And then the third meaning of Shiva is a point. And in Arabic script, the point is the symbol of zero. And so the one who doesn't have any physical form, the one who is immutable, changeless, the one who it is said who doesn't do anything, but who gets things done. What does God have to do? The principal act of God, I think, is purification of humanity, the world, the planet, the universe. So God is very often mentioned as the purifier and also the liberator. So the times when we've been talking about the laws of karma, people have difficulty understanding the complications of karma, but the God is the most intelligent, sometimes called the intelligence of the wise, one who knows exactly how the laws of karma work and what are the complexities that we have got tied up in, and who actually guides us out of all of those entanglements into a state of freedom. And this is why God is called the liberator.
You used the word earlier, creator. Okay. You said in an earlier show that the soul is immortal.
Yes.
And you also said that matter just is. What is God the creator of if the soul always is and matter always is? What creator of what?
There is the creation. So the creation,
the creation
is,
by that you mean earth?
No, more than that.
Exactly.
There is earth, there are the five elements of matter, there is earth, there are the people,
yes,
society,
yes,
animals, birds, etc. So creator means he makes it from a certain state into another state. So that is really what the word creation means. So it doesn't mean brings souls into existence or brings matter into existence, but rather it has to do with a transformation of souls and matter from a completely chaotic state into a state of balance, order, perfection, beauty.
One has to simply open the newspaper of the town and city that you're living in, or one has to switch on BBC News or CNN to see the level of suffering that exists in the world. And one strong criticism about theists: if God exists, why is there so much of suffering, and why is he not helping?
This is because they have created definitions of God which they just made up, which are not accurate. So the thing to do is to really try to find out, and you can only find out from God, what do you do? Ask God, okay, what do you do? Because the definitions of God that people work with assume something which is not really true, and because of that doesn't work out, and so it creates confusion. So what God says is that I am the one who brings all of this chaos and suffering and so on to an end and change the world from a state of suffering to a state of happiness, and that act is the act of creation.
I see. There are atheists and agnostics watching you right now and think, hey, lady in white, you're nuts, okay? prove to me that the Supreme Soul exists. What proof do you have? How would you answer that challenge?
I think it'd be really nice if there are some atheists and agnostics sitting with us. That's really good. In a conversation.
Okay, the reason I'm asking this question is because you said in your definition, in your understanding of the Supreme Soul, that he is not visible. He does not have one of these. He's not human, which means that he's not visible to the human eye.
That's right.
And if he's not visible, how do you know that whatever you're doing in what you call yoga is not simply your imagination?
God is the teacher of yoga. That's one of the attributive names of God, the teacher of yoga, Yogeshwar, or the God of yoga. So yoga is communion between you and God, and because God is outside the range of people, because people's range is very limited to the material world pretty much, and a few concepts that are slightly subtle but not that far out of the material world, God has to actually come to our level and talk to us and bring us onto his or her level. God is genderless, the father, the mother, the friend, the beloved. God says, I relate to you, I come to you in all relationships, because it is through all relationships that you are able to actually absorb from God the treasures that are contained within God. So that means it is incumbent upon ourselves to actually engage with God in relationship. So it's not a one-way process, it's a two-way process. And just like having a relationship with another human being, people find it pretty difficult, and there are all kinds of karmic problems in that. But when you have a relationship with God, your side may be not so good, but God's side will be all right. So if you're relating with somebody who knows how to relate, you will learn slowly, slowly how to relate.
And for the skeptic, the atheist that says, what you just said doesn't make sense to me. I mean, how could you possibly speak with such authority, because you're having a relationship with the human being? Oh, and if I'm not mistaken, there's some psychological definitions of some people who claim to know God. It's certifiable. Aren't you? Yeah.
Well, there have to be a few other characteristics along with that.
Luckily. Yes. So, but an atheist is sitting in this chair saying, prove it to me. I'm curious.
I don't really need to prove it. I think that when you say prove, you have certain criteria, and in a way, trying to prove God to someone is not a very intelligent thing to do. I think if a person really wants to know, is there or is there not God, they will need to do a lot of thinking, and they will need to address God in their thoughts. Even if you're really fed up with God, or you don't like God, or whatever it is, you're still engaging. And if you say, well, God doesn't exist, then God will say, okay, well, I'll see you later, you know.
Okay.
But sooner or later, I do think that every soul will have an encounter with God, because a soul actually exists in relationship with God eternally. And so if you're an atheist, you are denying God, but it doesn't change the fact that beyond your denial, you have a relationship with God, which is totally dormant, totally disactivated. Or the agnostic, who will say, well, I don't know. Whatever I'm hearing from the world, I'm not convinced, so I'm an I don't know person. And that person who says, I don't know, sooner or later they will be wanting to know. And so God responds to people, soul to soul. And if a person...
How does he do this?
Oh, well, he says things like, you know, if you would see my television studio,
okay,
you would be amazed, because in my television studio, I can see everyone, what they're doing, what they're thinking, what they're feeling.
Okay, how does God communicate to you? What medium, what vocabulary does he use? What medium of communication does he use? How do you know that you're not imagining your relationship? Where is at what stage does your experience begin?
I think there are many levels on that. There's a very deep internal one where there's a recognition of God, there's a relationship going on. When you have encounters, when you have experiences, when you have visionary type of experiences, that will satisfy you. But it might be nothing to do for anybody else. I mentioned earlier that God will use a medium to talk to us, because that has to be physical words.
Mm-hmm.
And so when God speaks through his medium, Brahma, he says certain things. And so what does he say? He says, you are my child, you're a soul, and you're not a body, and I am your father and your mother. And as your father, I want to adopt you in such a way that you can take my inheritance, because you have rights and you are right now depleted, and I am the ocean of peace and love and power and everything that you have a right to. And when you engage in relationship with me, then you start to claim your inheritance and absorb all the knowledge, all the power, all the qualities of God, because this is how God fills the world with those qualities that transform the world into what is sometimes known as the world of heaven. Heaven is not famous for having been created by any other person than God.
Yeah, that is true. Okay.
So, you know, it's not really about proof. A person will develop faith, will cultivate faith. God speaks of four types of faith. He says you need to have faith in yourself. That's a big one right there. Mm-hmm. You need to have faith in me, God. That's a big one. You need to have faith in the drama. He explains about this drama, that everything that happens in this world is good. even though it doesn't always look like it, but the drama is beneficial. And so you have to have faith that whatever happens is as it should be. And then a fourth faith that is specifically for Brahma Kumars and Kumaris, you have to have faith in the family. So everyone is at whatever level they are, you need to have faith in each other. You know, because a time will come when God will withdraw and just go and be detached and sit back in the world of nirvana. And he says this, take, while I'm actively present here, take everything you can from me, because after some time I will go. And then whatever
is
you
that
have
time
taken,
now?
Well, God comes at the time where the cycle has to change during the confluence age, and then he says, when I've done my work, then I go into retirement and I give you a perfected world.
Okay, and what job does he do when he comes, as you put it? What does he do? What's his...
Well, first of all, he has to educate us. And then he has to enable us.
He educates us about what?
Who we are, who he is, the cycle, the ages, how they turn, what happens, what is the force of evil, what is the force of good, karma, drama, all of these things. He has to educate us. It's a lot of information. So you sit down and you study. So God becomes your teacher. Then you have to take his treasures. So for that you have to really have faith in yourself, otherwise you'll think, oh, well, I'm unworthy, so I won't take. He says, no, no, don't think like that. Think you're worthy and take, because if you don't take, you won't get. And so it's during the confluence age that all of this takes place, and when the confluence age is completed, he has said, I will withdraw, you know.
Okay, so how does karma feature into this equation with God? Because not everybody on the planet will be so fortunate to hear and have a relationship with God directly, are they?
Well,
so how does karma feature into the equation?
Well, God says to us, you have an obligation to make it possible for everyone on earth to be able to make contact with God. So this is why we do service.
Okay. And karma?
Well, you have karma with people, you have karma with matter, and you also have karma with God.
Okay.
So during this confluence age, it's actually possible for you to engage in your karma with God. So you create a karma account with God. And this karma account with God actually frees you from your karmic bondages with people, with things, and so on. So this is how he frees us, is through our engaging in interaction, karma, life with God.
What is God's message to the human being watching this show? What is the message in God's heart that he's imparting to his child who's yet to know him? What are his words? What is he saying?
He's saying, you're a soul, you're my child, you're eternal, you're immortal. The cycle is completing. You have become spiritually depleted, and so I am here to give you everything that you have lost, to restore to you your power, your all of your qualities of love and peace and wisdom and light, and I am completely available for you. So take as much as you possibly can from me and make your life successful. This is my gift to you. My legacy to you. That's his message.
Okay, as simple as that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, we can talk about this subject for a good hour or so, but that does bring us to the end of today's segment. This is the discussion on God, how God is viewed through the eyes of a seasoned Brahma Kumari, and Sister Denise related to us, or what God is, where does he live, and his role vis-a-vis humanity. And so I hope you learned something today, as it's always interesting listening to Sister Denise and her sharings. It brings us to the end of today's episode, and if you do want to contact Brahma Kumaris to learn about more, I'm sure you can find one in your local community. We thank you for joining us, and goodbye.